lead of 89 runs for India at the end of day two of the four tests, which has been a very enthralling day of cricket. There's been wickets, there's been some great old fast bowling, there's been some good spin on display, and then we had an extraordinary century as well. Rishabh Pant, the centurion, taking India to 294 for seven. As mentioned, a lead of 89 runs. Hello and welcome to Hotspot Daily with me, Chetan Narula, and Daniel Norcross in London. Daniel, the first thing we have to talk about, and we absolutely must talk about it, is Rishabh Pant's knock. It has set the test match up. It has set the momentum for India. And it has pegged England back, because at one stage, they looked like they would take a 30-40 run lead over India.
Well, it was extraordinary. It's an extraordinary day and an extraordinary innings. It reminds me a little bit of the second test at Chennai, when the difference between the two sides was Rohit Sharma's extraordinary innings. And again, you know, England had fought so hard, much harder, I think, than either of us thought they still had left in them to give at the end of this tour. They were quite impeccable for two sessions. And then as they ran out of seam slightly, Rishabh Pant pounced. And that was what was so marvellous about the innings, as much as anything else. You know, people think about him as this dasher. They, you know, often you hear pundits say, well, they won't mind Rishabh Pant playing like that because he's going to give you a chance. Well, they'll mind him playing like that, I tell you, because it was just magnificent. His first 50 was really measured. And then as he just sensed that the England bowlers, especially the pacers, were pretty much done after a really long, hot day, and there were only two of them, he realised, right, this is my time to go. He went after the new ball. He played that outrageous reverse ramp. It was fantastic.
Can you believe that? Yeah. Could you believe that shot? I mean, you look, yes, and I have to interject here, because I have to say this. I mean, you view that shot from an audience perspective, from a spectator's perspective, and you were like, okay, hey, how do you do that to James Anderson? But think of James Anderson. This is a guy who's taken, 600 test wickets? He's nearing 1,000 wickets in international cricket. He's 38 years old. He's played two decades of international cricket. And here comes this youngster, and he's ramping him in a test match.
Yeah, more than that. I mean, you know, that was extraordinary in itself, but it was the what Anderson did. I mean, he couldn't believe what his eyes were telling him. And don't forget, this isn't just all those things you said about James Anderson are true. You should also add to it, he's taken 14 wickets this winter in pitches that don't suit him. He's gone for an average at 11, and he's going in under 2 runs and over. And this guy has the audacity to take on the most parsimonious seam bowler in world cricket at the moment, who everybody else in his side is just blocking, and go, yeah, you know what? I think we can take you over second slip for a one bounce four. Are you joking me? Yeah. I mean, it was spectacular. It was one of those things where, you know, even England fans, I hope, even dyed-in-the-wool England fans will be able to say that, like, for an hour and a half after tea watching Pant, this is what we're in cricket for, is to watch innings like that. And you've got to see it in the context of the day, because the context of the day was that scoring runs at more than two and over was so, so hard. He was the only one who really did it. Yeah, Washington Sundar batted splendidly with him. He got the better of the conditions, you know, and he'd come in later and the bowlers were tiring, but he batted very well, did Washington Sundar. But what you pay your gate money for, what you wake up at 4 a.m. in England watching cricket for, is to see innings like that. It was quite fantastic. I saw him do something not dissimilar in a losing cause at the Oval in Alistair Cook's last test match. And, you know, you knew then that you were watching somebody brilliant. But as is the nature of Indian cricket, he was like, wasn't being picked for every game. And then there was this talk, you know, should it be Sahar or Pant? And you're going, what do you mean either or? You just play him. It's like, you know, it's like the whole thing we have with Jadeja in England. Can't understand why Pant and Jadeja aren't the first two names on the team sheet, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a thing of beauty. It was a thing of wonder to watch. And it has, I would say, won India the test match and taken the World Test Championship final as he won the test match at Brisbane. You know, I mean, when India play that game, they will have him to thank for two really crucial interjections.
Yeah, and you know, it's really a good summary of what you've said about Rishabh Pant. And Yes, it does take your mind back to what, 2018 and 2019 in that World Cup, that he played that horrendous stroke and was caught at the boundary in Manchester. And Virat Kohli was so angry, had such an angry tirade in the balcony of the Manchester dressing room. And today he was jumping with joy in that Ahmedabad dressing room balcony. So it just goes to show the journey of Rishabh Pant as a batsman from 2018-19. It's been really frustrating times. We all know the sort of cricketer that he can become or he could become. And in that sense, I would like to add that 2021 has actually started well for Rishabh Pant. He has become the cricketer that we all thought that he could become. And you mentioned Brisbane. I thought more than Brisbane, SCG was even more important, because had India lost the SCG Test match, they wouldn't have won the series and had one foot in the door of the World Test Championship final. So it's not just Brisbane. It started in Sydney and it gave them a whiff, helped them save the Test match. Then Brisbane. Brisbane was mind-blowing. He should have a square or a patch of grass named after him at the Gabba, Rishabh Pant. And then he's done well this series. What has been most impressive from him in this series is not the fact that he's got those runs, apart from Rohit Sharma and Ravichandran Ashwin, but the keeping skills. I mean, it's not easy keeping to Ashwin and the spinners on the last three tracks. The first one, leave the first one. The last three tracks, it's not easy. You need somebody like a Saha, but he's hardly made mistakes. He's been creeping low. He's been moving well with the gloves. He's been catching the ball. It's not just his growth as batsman, but also his growth as keeper, which is really, really of significant consequence. Because now I'll tell you, it's the T20 series after this, and KL Rahul is the designated wicketkeeper for India in T20s because Rishabh Pant was not part of India's plans. Suddenly, he is back, and I think he will be given the keeping and the batting duties, and Rahul will be like, okay, I can just open the batting and, you know, have no fuss behind the stumps. It'll be very, very interesting to watch that. But at the same time, just to highlight the context that you put so brilliantly, yes, India were struggling at one point, and the partnership with the Washington Sundar really brought them back. The audacity, the outrageous audacity to score at what? At one stage, 7 and over in that last session. Amazing, just amazing, Daniel.
It was amazing. Well, he was going at the strike rate of about 200 after he got to his 50. I'm going to hit you with a stat, because I've got a couple of stats for us today. But already on the 5th of March, Rishabh Pant is the 9th leading run scoring wicketkeeper for India in a calendar year. And it's the 5th of March. Now then, the all-time record I think he's got to beat is Johnny Bairstow, who had an annus mirabilis many years back. He got about 1,500 runs in the year. He's got 5 test matches against England in the summer coming up.
He's got a T20 World Cup. He's got
Test cricket.
So five tests. Yeah, so there's probably a second innings to go here, then 5 tests in England, then 2 tests, minimum 2 tests against New Zealand at home, and then potentially 2 tests or at least 1 test against South Africa in December. The schedule is not out yet. So,
Chetan, you're forgetting the most
important one. The World Test Championship final. Yes, yes. How can I forget that? He's the one who's taking India there single-handedly, isn't he?
Exactly. So, you know, hats off. It was terrific to watch. But I will say, though, that, you know, from an England point of view, not just an England point of view, I think from the game point of view, when we finished our summary yesterday, that felt like the worst day in many ways for England. Having won the toss, good pitch, scored clearly not enough runs on that, although it started to look like it might be enough runs at one point today. And the reason why that was because of incredible bowling performance from two seamers.
Yes.
Who are very contrasting. You know, one, as we've mentioned, 38 years old, playing his 4th test out of the last 5, which we weren't expecting.
No.
On a pitch that wasn't really responsive to him. It wasn't bad for him, but it wasn't a pitch that, you know, he'd pick up and take around the world with him.
No.
And at the other end, he had Ben Stokes, who's barely bowled really in the last, certainly this winter. He's bowled just a few overs here and there. And the amount of effort and drive they put into that first session, and indeed the second session, bowling a combination of dry but also really probing lengths. Anderson was absurdly immaculate. I mean, his first 17 overs went for 19 runs.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, he's picked up his wickets at an average of 11 this winter. He just gets better and better. And, you know, England have got to be thinking, oh, crikey, if we'd picked Ollie Stone or Chris Wokes, just another seamer instead of poor old Don Bess. And I know the thinking. The thinking was, look, the pitches are going to turn. We've seen how they've turned. But their whole day kind of came down to that crux, didn't it? Who was going to be their fourth bowler, in effect? And they couldn't rely on their fourth bowler. I'm going to give you another stat, Chetan, because this is an amazing one. Don Bess, I think, has now bowled 29 full tosses out of 294 balls. That's one every 10 balls is a full toss. For contrast, Ashwin has bowled 8 in 980, and Leach has bowled 7 in 940. So, you know, that's like one in every 120 balls is a full toss. For Don Bess, it's one in every 10. Now, the reason I raise this is because this is not to have a go at Don Bess.
No.
It is absolutely clear with the naked eye that he is struggling big time at the moment. Now, that doesn't mean to say he'll always struggle in his career. This could be, you know, he's just going through a painfully bad trot. And it meant that Root really, you know, he had to bowl him at times when he really didn't want to bowl him. And Bess will know that. Bess will know, for example, that Moeen Ali was the only player who's been asked not to go home for their scheduled break, which doesn't reflect well on the confidence that they had in Bess after the second test. So, you know, he's gone into there with confidence problems, and it's really shown. I mean, when you're bowling at a full toss every 10 balls, and some of those were big full tosses. I mean, there was one to Sundar, was like knee height, and he hadn't moved down the wicket, was smashed back over his head. It was tough. It was tough to watch. And you just feel, from an England point of view, there'll be a certain degree of regret that had they picked a better lineup, had they picked an extra seamer, you fancy that it would have been much harder for Punt and Sundar going into that last session. You feel that they would be tighter, we would be closer to parity. As it is, I'm afraid that that session, England may have lost it in that session, in that final session of the day.
Absolutely. There's no doubt the way England lost momentum, I would say. I mean, funny things happen in cricket, so you can't really say that England have already lost the game. But they've definitely lost the momentum. They've definitely lost the edge that was given to them by Anderson and Stokes. And look, like I mentioned off air to you, I was expecting that morning session to go the way it did. I was expecting Anderson and Stokes to have really good spells, but I did not expect for the length that those spells would go on. Or, for example, Ben Stokes, here's a stat for you. He bowled 10 overs straight, and that was an immaculate spell. And considering that he was not 100% before, I'm not talking about fitness, we're talking about what's deli belly and stomach cramps and all that jazz. This has been a significant performance from Ben Stokes. James Anderson, as we all know, he's a champion, but you know, not the best kind of wicket for him, but he's had immaculate control. And considering all of that, I thought England were giving a really torrid time to India. You look at the example of somebody like a Pujara. Jack Leach was supporting them. You know, he was supporting them ably, but one of the things that I realized, and I'll come to Pujara in just a second, I thought the English spinners, both Leach and Dom Bess and Joe Root included, they were not getting the same purchase as the Indian spinners got on day one. And the only reason India was struggling at one point, six down for 150 or 160 odd, was because the English pacers had kept them in the game. That was a magnificent spell of bowling. If ever anyone doubts James Anderson's credentials in the subcontinent again, first of all, he's a fool. But if they do, show him today's spell, the way he's bowled. I mean, immaculate. Now, simply here, yes, you highlighted the factor that England did not have the right personnel on the ground. They did not probably pick the playing 11 that they would have picked this time around, or probably they should have picked this playing 11 for the last test match. I'm not sure. And this is something that we discussed yesterday. But I also want to talk about that statistic there that, you know, Dom Bess is bowling, what, one in 10 deliveries, one full toss in 10 deliveries. It reminds me of Stuart McGill. And the reason why Stuart McGill was never that, he was a good bowler, but he was never a bowler who could hold a light to, say, somebody like Shane Warne. I mean, he has his group of fans, Stuart McGill fans, who are like, no, Shane Warne was this, that, and everything, and they'll probably be against me. But Stuart McGill was always giving a loosener, giving away runs, which is what set him apart from somebody like a Shane Warne. And I think that has been the big misgiving or the big negative for Dom Bess. And this is not something that has happened to him just today or just off late, because Indian fans or Indian cricket journalists, they watched the Sri Lanka series to see what English spinners could do. And even in Sri Lanka, Dom Bess was picking wickets off full tosses, off half trackers. Yeah, yeah. So probably Dom Bess, yes, he's going down with confidence, because he took four wickets in Chennai and then he was left out and Moeen Ali was asked not to go home. It was clear who they wanted to prefer. And even in Sri Lanka, let me put it out there, and this might hurt Dom Bess even further if he is listening to it. Why would he be listening to this? But just in case he is, this will hurt you, Dom, because I don't think you would have played in Sri Lanka if Moeen Ali did not have that bout of COVID-19. If he did not suffer from COVID-19, you wouldn't have played in Sri Lanka. Pure and simple. So it's England's policy to bring along three spinners. They don't really play three spinners, but Moeen Ali has been the big miss. And yes, there's a lot wrong with the team selection, but also talking about the Indian batting a bit, Pujara, he's playing a lot with his pads in front of his bat. It was a problem in Australia. It's a problem here as well. I think that's something that he needs to recognize and rectify. Virat Kohli, what's happened to him, Daniel? What's happened to him?
You know, is it possible to feel sorry for Virat Kohli? I mean, he's a man who has everything, and I'm sure he doesn't need any of my pity.
If you want. No.
Yeah, perhaps feeling sorry for is not quite the right phrase, but he's had some pearlers. He's made some errors of judgment. We don't know what kind of form he's in, really, because he's not been at the crease awfully long enough for us to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, the ball that he got today, I think, you know, I haven't checked, but it feels strongly like it bounced more than most of the balls we saw today.
Yeah.
There was a little bit more in it from Stokes. He probably put that little bit more effort into it, which he can do. He surprised Kohli. It got big on him really quickly. And, you know, if your brain isn't 100% clear, which perhaps Kohli's wasn't, then you are going to get, you're going to fence at that, which he did. And he traipsed off for a duck, and that was the very high point for England. I mean, I suspect maybe the high point was probably the dismissal of Rohit Sharma, because then England really, really did feel that they had a door open. But yeah, the Indian top order hasn't really fired. I mean, looking at their season, their series averages, only Rohit Sharma averages over 50.
Well, I got the Pujara thing wrong.
Bailed out.
I got the Pujara thing wrong.
Yeah, no, you didn't quite, did you? I think you said if he was still in at half 10, and I think he was out at 10:23.
Yeah.
So I think you were okay. You were within 7 minutes of getting it wrong. Look, I think
quite gracious of you to say that, but yeah.
But I think we both got it a little wrong. I think, as I said earlier, I think where we got it wrong was I think we thought that England were cooked. Were done, and that the disappointment of yesterday would be impossible to come back from.
Yeah,
I was really impressed by their spirit. I was really impressed by the fight that they put in. And that's why I keep coming down to the selection issue, because what they've done is they've picked a bowler in Dom Bess who is obviously not in the right place at the moment. And so when you do that, you're going in with a bowler that you don't actually really want to bowl.
Yeah.
So rather than think and try and guess the conditions, just say to yourself, I need a reliable bowler. I need an Ollie Stone. I need a Chris Wokes. We play him instead. And Dom needs to go and lie down for a little bit, poor thing. I mean, I feel for him. I mean, hey, there is somebody I really do feel sorry for, because it must be really tough out there right now for him.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, I also thought, like you mentioned, that they made a mega, mega effort. I also thought that this was a day when England realized, I mean, they can't leave it as late as the fourth innings. They can't say, okay, you know what, fourth innings is going to be really hell of a pitch to bat on. So let's leave it until that. Let's get some runs in the third innings and make India pay for it. No, I think England recognized that this is the last day they could really compete in this test series, and they threw the kitchen sink at it. It wasn't perhaps good enough because of team selection, not because their effort was lacking. It was mostly down to team selection. Because the two bowlers who were causing the most trouble, they were spent. They were spent by the third session. And then Rishabh Pant and Washington Sundar made hay. One more thing that we mentioned yesterday, Dan Lawrence jumping out at number 8. Compare that to what India's number 8 has done. Washington Sundar, he's batting 16 out of 117. That is the difference it makes when you're set on pitches like these and go on to score some decent runs. Which means India now have a lead of 89 runs. Quickly, Daniel, what do you think is going to happen on day 3?
I think England are going to regret exactly that policy towards the back end of their own innings. They needed to get to 250, 260. That would have kept them in it. I think there's every chance that a refreshed Stokes and Anderson might wrap up the tail without too much more damage. But the damage has already been done. A lead of 100 and over, which is what India will have, is going to put so much pressure back onto England. This really will be their last chance saloon. Tomorrow, they have to be batting at the close of play. The last five innings they've batted does not inspire confidence. But then, weirder things have happened, Chetan. if we are talking about England being five, six or seven down overnight this time tomorrow, the game is back on.
Even if Anderson and Stokes come and wrap up the tail very quickly, let's say a lead of 100 because they're just 11 runs short. If England lose Joe Root before the lead is taken care of, game over. That's my prediction. Well, at least we'll be back for a third episode in this test match, as we have been promising from the start. We don't know if we'll be back for a fourth. We hope so. But here's to you joining us at the end of day three. Until then, it's me, Chetan Arora, and Daniel Norcross saying goodbye.
Goodbye.